The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to Taking Charge with Paula Robinson on a beautiful, beautiful Thursday afternoon. How are you, Paula?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Lots going on. So happy. We got a Phillies businessman special. My family's down there and hoping for a W, but you never know these days. I know we have a great guest I'm going to bring into the program Steve Cohen. How are you, sir?
I am great, Joe. Thanks.
It's our pleasure to have you. We're going to talk a little workers' comp, Jersey comp, Philly comp, the comparison. Steve, little story I tell from when I was a union iron worker on the Walt Whitman Bridge, okay? There was a saying that we used to have. If you get injured and you're on the Jersey side, crawl to the PA side.
That's funny.
And that was mostly because of what? The medical, right?
Right.
But, you know, it's funny because we've done a lot of shows. You have an outstanding workers' compensation attorney like yourself. That's not necessarily true. But I also did some shows with some Delaware attorneys. And once I learned that, had I known it back then, you would crawl over to the PA side and make a left up 95 and just keep going till you got there. But if you would, introduce yourself, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and the firm.
Okay. I appreciate it. Number one, thank you so much for inviting me. My name's Steve Cohen. I'm an attorney, 30-plus years. I've been doing personal injury workers' compensation work for all of those years, the last 20 exclusively representing injured workers, only in the state of New Jersey.
And, you know, it's certainly, you know, Paul, we talk about it a lot, you know, even in Pennsylvania, you know, you get injured on the job, people have a tendency to want to try to navigate things themselves. They want to try to, you know, do everything they can, to be mindful of their employer and all. And a lot of times they just end up getting tied up in a pretzel and in a nightmare that literally they can't even imagine. That is true for New Jersey in particular, too. It's why you need good legal counsel. How many individuals, Steve, when they get injured on the job, walk in your office and literally have no idea or no knowledge of what's going on, particularly if they've never been injured before?
Right. I would venture to guess probably 25 to 30% of the people who come in have no idea what their rights are. Zero.
Yeah, and in Jersey, there's the medical situation that where, you know, you're in PA, Paul, what is the when it comes to medical, what is the, what are the rules, and also the employer has to meet certain requirements. How does that work in PA?
Well, when someone files a claim or reports it to their employer, if the claim is accepted, it can be accepted in a few different ways. One is medical only, where they don't pay any wage loss benefits, but just the medical. And then there's another way that they could just pay the medical with a notice of temporary compensation payable, and that's only good for 90 days.
But having said that, I'm talking about picking your own doctor. In other words, determining where you have to go once you get injured on the job. There's a couple options here. If the employer, they have to meet specific requirements, and if they don't, how's that work?
Well, the employers are supposed to give the hired employee a list of panel providers when they're hired and after they have suffered their work injury. Some employers don't have these panel providers. If they do, the claimant is expected to treat with them for the first 90 days in order to get their medical bills paid. It doesn't necessarily mean they can't treat off panel, but they might be responsible for those bills. But what I'm seeing is a lot of employers just say, you go here, and they don't even give them the list or the choice.
And people, they just go, I mean, a lot of times, because they just don't. And I say that because you hear certain nightmares. And so, my God, if in PA, it's the only what's it, certified workers' compensation specialist. It's one of the only areas of the law that, you know, it's, I don't know if it's so, it's so specialized. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if it's so complicated, but it is so specialized that the attorneys actually get certified. So imagine regular Joes like me trying to figure that one out. Steve, in Jersey, that's not the way it is.
It is not the way it is. Basically, the employer or its insurance carrier directs and controls the treatment exclusively to the providers of their choosing. Yeah. So you don't really get a panel list. Sometimes with certain carriers, you can ask them, is this doctor in network? And they may agree to it. But generally speaking, the employer or its insurance carrier is directing the treatment to the physicians of their choosing.
Right. And we know from the panel doctors in PA, and I don't know exactly how it, you know, works and what the sentiments are typically, but we've had, you know, people try to navigate it and walk into a room where they couldn't lift their shoulder up above their head. They're an iron worker. They're trying to look and, you know, and they want to be back at work. They're maybe a union guy or something, and they're making a lot of money, but they're not while they're at home. And all of a sudden the doc's going, you know, you're ready to go back to on Monday.
I have had countless people come into my office with what's clearly, you don't have to be a doctor to know
but
they have a ruptured biceps tendon.
Right.
They have a biceps deformity, right? A Popeye deformity. And they've come into my office shortly after the accident, and the treating doctor from the urgent clinic that they were sent to said, go back to work.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
I mean, it just amazes me. We've had doctors on who, they may have worked on both sides, but they represent plaintiffs. A lot of times they treat plaintiffs. And it just amazes me how that's even possible. You know, you go to medical school, I'm sure you take an oath and all that stuff, and you see somebody across the room and you're in there. You hear the stories. I was in there for 3.5 minutes. If that.
Well, remember again who they're paid by.
Yeah.
They're panel doctors.
Yeah, it's just it drives me crazy. Having said that, what's that process once, you know, in New Jersey, it's a selected panel. Tell me about the panel.
It depends on the insurance company, but they either have network physicians by virtue of contract, or they just have physicians that they're accustomed to using. It depends upon the carrier. And so it's not appreciably different than PA in that, you know, you have an obligation as an injured worker to report it, the fact that you were injured, to your employer, and they in turn have an obligation to then direct you to a physician for treatment.
Now, Steve, what got you into representing the injured workers? And also I want to ask a little bit about the firm, because it's a quality firm.
Yeah. I graduated law school. I immediately started, even before law school, I was clerking for a defense firm, a fairly significant defense firm. So all my experience was in personal injury workers' compensation work. I graduated school, I started working for a small personal injury firm, and then started learning workers' comp. It's not the kind of practice that you typically learn in law school.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, on the job training kind of thing. Before that, I'll interject, you know, years ago, I used to work here. I worked for Reliance Insurance Company.
Okay. Well, a lot of individuals, I would say a minimum of 50% of the attorneys that have been on the program and just are doing plaintiff's worked on the defense side.
It's hugely helpful.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. It's got to be invaluable experience. Yeah.
I did the same thing. I did defense work for 20 some years. And when I first got out of law school, I graduated at a time where I had to wait to take the bar, and I got a job at Chubb Insurance in Pittsburgh, and that was invaluable.
Yeah. I mean,
what's nice about it is it gives you a perspective that you don't otherwise appreciate just doing plaintiff's work or personal injury work or workers' compensation work representing the injured worker. You know how the insurance company thinks.
Mm-hmm.
You know what sets off red flags for them. You know, and, you know, the accident that happens on Friday and doesn't get reported until Monday, that's setting off some alarms over there.
Well, all right, hold on for a second. You just hit on something there. Paul, we've had this exact conversation in regards to man or woman who worked for their employer 20 years, everything's cool. Never had a problem in their day, you know, maybe never late, but all of a sudden something happens, maybe not a catastrophic, seemingly catastrophic injury on a Friday. So, you know, they don't, God forbid, you know, fall off the building, but they may have been, you know, working with, you know, some sort of, they picked up an acetylene tank and all of a sudden, you know, didn't go too well. It's maybe 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, or quitting times at 3:30. I'm not gonna make any waves. I'm just gonna chill, we'll go home over the weekend. We're not working overtime. There's a big Eagles game on. We're doing real well at the time. That's a hypothetical situation. I'm going to just see if I can suck it up over the weekend and maybe come in on Monday, right? Now, when I come in on Monday, and I would like you to just tell me, you know, both of you, is there a big ceremony for me? Do I get a trophy? I just sucked it up over the weekend, and, you know, speeches, the whole team, everybody's coming. Joe did it. Or do they not give me a trophy and an award? And in some cases, how does that go, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, it really varies upon the employer.
Sure.
You know, when you asked me at the outset, how do people come into me with what kind of knowledge, I should have said also, I have plenty of clients who come in because their boss brought them in.
Yeah.
And they say to me, you know, whatever this guy's entitled to, that's what I want.
I get you. But I've also had employers tell me, or individuals, or attorneys have said to me, the employer supported them completely, but that's not exactly the insurance company.
Right, right.
You know, that's a real Twilight Zoner. So, I mean, you know, one guy, the boss was driving next to a truck. His employer, something fell off, hit him. Then the boss, the owner with the company was like, yeah, I saw the whole thing. And they still denied his claim.
Yeah.
And so I get what you're saying. I'm sure when that boss comes in and says that, and we're all real grateful that he does.
Yeah.
That's still not the end of it, right? I mean, you know, it's.
That's true. That's true.
And that's just because the nature, you know, in a different way, Flo and the Gecko don't tell you that just because you paid a premium, they're all going to sit around and go, you know what? You know, and this is work comp, but
there's other issues that are involved here. It's not just whether an accident happened.
Yeah.
But it also could be what's transpired along the way with regard to the treatment, where they then start contesting the nature of the person's injuries or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. I mean, and because it is a roller coaster ride, especially if you don't get an attorney right away. And a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to make waves, but what they don't realize is that the insurance company attorneys, you know, they go right in the protocol effective immediately, right?
Right.
I mean, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's not personal. And so you're protecting yourself or at least getting educated.
At a minimum, you're educating yourself by talking to a lawyer. There's no harm talking to a lawyer.
Well, you know, is that after you talk to your 40 buddies on the job and they give you 40 different stories?
Right.
And then you finally call, in my world, the union world, you know, that's when you call the business agent or business manager, president of the union, go, listen, what do I do here? I can't stand up, and I got a problem. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fellas told me 40 different things, but getting that education is priceless.
Right.
When we, and I'd like to explore a couple different things, something that... A couple things that I know you know nothing about, Steve, especially since I watched your videos on the website. So, and so you know, they were informative. But I know you know nothing about, you know, termination in regards to when somebody gets injured on a job, they file a claim, and all of a sudden they find themselves out of a job first time in 10 years. Or did that tutorial that you gave on your website, which was very informative. give some insight on what that.
Well, the Workers' Comp Act in New Jersey provides very little remedy for that. It is illegal for an employer to fire someone or discriminate against them because they're pursuing their rights under the Workers' Comp Act. But does it happen? Sure, it happens. It happens probably more than it should. The smaller the employer, the more likely it's probably going to happen. I generally refer that person out to an employment lawyer to pursue the case as an employment-related case as opposed to in the workers' comp system.
Now, is New Jersey, like PA, an at-will state?
Yes.
Okay, that's yeah. and that same situation in Philly and in PA, right, Paul?
And I do the exact same thing. I refer them out to employment law attorneys.
I call my buddies down South Philly and say, "Go visit this guy." just kidding, guys.
But you, coming from a union background, you have much more
collective bargaining.
You have much more protection than the average Joe.
Right. Well, it's interesting you say that because it's still funny that when somebody gets injured on the job, they still, even 98% of the union men and women, they don't want to stay out. They, you know, they're doing everything they possibly can. But it's still, obviously, sometimes you can't help it.
Right.
And you need, and even with all the union, support and the business agents and the organizers and all that, not everybody knows. And these rules can be complicated. And if you don't do the right thing from day one, in what happens in New Jersey, if you get injured on the job, you don't know any better. You go to an emergency room. I'm assuming that's okay, but it's a long weekend, okay? And you end up going to your own family doctor on just because you want to try to get, as better as you can before you want to go back to work on Tuesday. And that family doctor orders, diagnostics and all that, and you have everything there. How does that work?
What happens? So the comp carrier is responsible for emergency care, okay? So you're going to have to, as an attorney or as a claimant, establish that the care was required as an emergent on an emergent basis. So generally speaking, you go to the hospital on Saturday, you had your accident Friday, workers' comp's going to pay for that.
Right.
Once you start going beyond what would be an emergency, now it's just regular care.
Got you.
Now you may start eating that bill. But really the smarter medical providers who are private practitioners, your general internist, they're looking at this and they're saying, "You got hurt at work? You got to go to workers' comp."
Yeah, they know.
They generally know.
Yeah.
Some don't, but we try and educate those doctors.
What about in Philly and PA, Paul, if somebody goes to an urgent care after work? Are urgent cares, are they either side? In other words, is there a difference in who their typical loyalty is to?
Well, workers' comp is supposed to pay for ER visits for the work injury.
It's the same exact scenario.
Yes.
No question about it. Let's do this. We're gonna go to break, and then we're gonna come back and talk about the firm.
Perfect.
And it's a diverse firm. You guys handle a lot of different injury types, and we're gonna have more from Taking Charge with Paul Robinson after the break.
Suffering a work injury can be a debilitating experience. Trying to navigate the workers' compensation system and process on your own can make it even worse. From the point of injury to the culmination of your claim and everything in between, certified workers' compensation attorney and specialist Paula Robinson will handle every facet of your workers' compensation matter to ensure that you get the representation and results you need in the face of a system that often treats injured workers like they don't matter. If you get injured on the job, call workers' compensation attorney Paula Robinson of Robinson Law at 215-530-7166 or go to robinsonlawyer.com. That's Robinson, LWYR.com, and get the support, the representation, and results you need to get back on your feet again.
Standing at the edge of a rocky shore, you breathe in the cool, salty air, watching the sun disappear on the horizon. Across the globe, someone begins their day along a sandy beach, listening to the rhythm of the crashing waves. You each envision a world beneath the water, vibrant life in every imaginable form. Now, imagine it's all gone. What was once a place of wonder and beauty is now a dull, lifeless wasteland. Food, jobs, medicine, all gifts from the ocean, all gone. Time is running out to protect our oceans. And without our love, everything the oceans provide can and will disappear. It's our choice. Love it or lose it. Help protect our oceans. Visit World Wildlife Fund at wwf.org/love.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Eleanor steals your heart. She was diagnosed at 5 weeks old, a type of leukemia, and it's associated with Down syndrome. Being able to come to St. Jude was a blessing and the best place for her. Talking to the doctors and nurses, they were on top of it. They got this, we got this, it's gonna be okay, and we're gonna get through this. Here, it's like a celebration of life. There's so much great stuff happening. The doctors and nurses are her best friends, and you can tell that they love her, and you could tell she loves them, and that relationship is just amazing. We're just so grateful for them.
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, finding cures, saving children. Learn more at stjude.org.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Taking Charge with Paul Robinson on WWDB Talk 860. We've got a great show. Paul's guest is Stephen Cohen of Davis, Saperstein & Solomon. We're going to talk a little bit about the firm, if you will, Stephen. Tell us about the firm.
So we're for North Jersey, very large personal injury firm, 30-plus lawyers. I run the firm's workers' comp practice. I have an associate, but every other attorney there is handling all sorts of personal injury work, any kind of accident case you could think of.
And that would range from?
Car accidents, fall down accidents, stuff that happens at kids' schools, just about any kind of accident that
premise
involves
liability.
Premises liability, anything that involves someone else's negligence.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Paul, remind our listeners, of course, about your firm, workers' compensation, it's a personalized firm.
Yes, I'm a solo practitioner. I've been practicing workers' comp for 35 years now, and I opened my doors in 2011, and I exclusively practice workers' comp in the state of Pennsylvania, representing injured workers only.
So, it's interesting because a lot of times when somebody gets injured on the job, okay, it becomes more than just a work injury. There is often a personal injury element to that.
Yes.
And how often it does that happen when people don't even realize it? Because they basically don't even understand workers' comp, so they'll walk in. And what does that entail in our neighborhood here?
Well, the cases I've seen, I'd say about maybe 10% involve a personal injury. So when I meet with the individual, I ask questions about, obviously, how did the work injury occur? And then a lot of times they don't even understand that they can have a third-party action. And then I, of course, would refer that action to a personal injury attorney to handle, because I handle the workers' comp piece.
And in Jersey and obviously in PA, the jurisdictions are different. So, you know, you could get an injured worker in Jersey and send that over to Steve, because that's what he does as
sure.
an expert, and vice versa.
Correct.
You know, when because, and I always find it amazing because the jurisdictions and the rules and the laws and all those things are different from one side of the bridge and another.
100%. The workers' comp laws I know enough to get myself in super trouble as far as what what's going on in PA.
Yeah. Okay?
So I don't suggest that I have any special expertise at all with respect to PA, but the laws are completely different.
Polar opposite. And but having said that, you also, and it's a, an interesting situation, if somebody gets injured on a job, you're and they're in New Jersey, it's not only a work comp case, but it also could be a third party case.
Yeah, let me sort of clarify. Sure. So that when you're hurt at work, at least in New Jersey, again, it doesn't matter who was at fault. You could have been yourself,
right,
completely at fault yourself, and right, still be entitled to workers'
comp.
That's
the same thing in PA, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
But if we have someone who caused that accident that's outside the employment relationship, you know, you're going to Home Depot to pick up supplies for your work site, and you are rear-ended by a UPS truck.
Mm-hmm.
You have a workers' comp case against your employer, but you can also potentially sue UPS. And so the benefit, as far as my firm goes, is we handle all of that in-house. So one attorney will handle the lawsuit aspect of it, and I'll handle the workers' comp component of it. And we
What are the benefits of that, of having those resources in the same house?
I think it's invaluable, really, because you can communicate with respect to any kind of issues that come up. The other aspect of this is, when workers' comp pays all these benefits for this injured worker, they're entitled to get their money back from a successful lawsuit. And so there's always lien issues that are involved. And when we talk about a lien, we're talking about their ability to secure their money back from
sure,
a successful lawsuit. So when we can work on that together, it's helpful.
So in other words, if it's a third-party case, and like you said, you got hit by UPS, and
I hate to use a specific right, company, but,
well, we get it. UPSD, yeah,
right?
Okay, how do you like
exactly?
But just giving an example. But having said that, you get hit by somebody who's working for another employer. That is what. So at that point, the workers' compensation provider is actually not your biggest enemy. They're actually at that point because they state, listen, that wasn't a normal work injury. That wasn't our fault. They get reimbursed.
Right. They become your ally.
Right.
As an attorney, because they'll do their own investigation. They'll share that information, because to the extent that I'm successful in suing the responsible party, they're getting their money back. Now, they don't get all of it back, but they get a large percentage.
And that's a subrogation lien, right?
Correct.
And how much... When you're negotiating that, what is a standard, you know?
So the lien in New Jersey, it's complicated, is basically the inverse of the legal fee in the lawsuit. So let me try and simplify that and put it in non-legal terms.
Okay.
If you're paying an attorney's fee in your lawsuit in New Jersey, it's standard a third of the recovery up to a certain amount of money. Workers' comp gets 66 and two-thirds back from a successful lawsuit. Effectively, they're paying one-third to get their money back.
Okay.
But that one-third doesn't go to the lawyer. It really goes to the client.
Sure.
Yeah.
And Paul, in the same type of situation in PA?
Yes.
And I wonder, what's that relationship like at that point with the workers' comp provider, who now is relying a little bit on you to represent them to make sure that they get their subrogation lien back?
Yeah, well, sometimes it can be difficult, because if the responsible party perhaps only has $15,000 in available insurance coverage, and the workers' comp carrier has expended $150,000, if workers' comp doesn't do something with that lien, my client gets nothing from the $15,000 recovery. Workers' comp effectively takes two-thirds of it, and my client, and he pays a one-third legal fee to my firm. So we're constantly trying to negotiate with the comp carrier to get them to reduce that lien, to put some money in the client's pocket.
Okay.
And that's an egregious example, but there's other examples where
there's no limit to the insurance.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, still, having said that, it is a definitely a different type of situation. But I'm sure it happens all the time, right?
I mean, correct.
Especially mm-hmm. on a third-party case. Let's talk about notice, okay? Somebody gets injured on the job. We got, I think that turns into the little chair. Yes, that's a good idea. Okay. See, we got all kinds of specialty chairs here, you know, at the station. It happened to me two or three times. All of a sudden, you feel like you're driving a car like that. But let's talk about the notice requirement.
Yeah.
What is it in Jersey and what is it in PA?
In Pennsylvania, people have...
You get injured on the job. I want to report what we said. You get injured on the job in Jersey. You get injured on a job in Philly or PA. You have to provide notice to your employer. What's the requirement in Philly or PA?
It's 120 days from the date that you knew you had the work injury.
Okay. And
it's less in Jersey. So there's a sliding scale. You're supposed to supply, I think it's 30 days under the statute. And then if you don't make it in 30 days, then you have to do it in 45 days unless the employer can show some kind of prejudice that's involved. Notice very, very rarely is an issue in New Jersey in terms of accidents because, generally speaking, people are generally telling their employer within a reasonable period of time that they believe that they got hurt in the course and scope of their employment.
And is there a specific way you would advise given, you know, that notice? In other words, people are hesitant sometimes just to give the notice, let alone a text, but, you know, some kind of, and I know it's a big deal in PA.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is there a definite a recommended way to do it?
Yes, as soon as you have the injury and you even suspect you might have, you know, injuries that are going to need treatment, you should give notice right away to a foreman, a manager, HR, whoever is in charge. And notice is recognized by phone, text.
Is there anything you would recommend now? Like, in other words, would you say, I would recommend a text because there's documentation there?
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
I do it all the time because there's times where people will contact me before they've even contacted their employer, you know, saying that they're injured, they're feeling pain, what do I do? And the first thing I encourage them to do is if you have your supervisor's phone number, I want you to text them or I want you to email them. Obviously, a call is acceptable.
Sure.
But then you don't really have proof. It potentially can be a he said, she said, oh, he never told me. So the best way to approach it is always to do it in writing. And I think that's almost with respect to anything in life, right?
Sure, right.
Right. Yeah. Sure, it doesn't have to be workers'
documentation.
Totally.
Well, yeah, and texts can be printed out, and I've used them as exhibits in litigation.
Same.
To prove that they gave notice.
And is there ever a time when I'm not going to say a defense for the defense, we didn't get notice, and at that point, you know, you have a text.
Right.
It seems to me that
it's pretty hard to dispute.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It would be, you know, that type of documentation.
I have used those as exhibits as well. Screenshots of phone records where there's a text exchange between the client and the boss. Used it countless times in motions that we filed with the court to try and get treatment approved or in trials.
Now, setting expectations as an attorney. And you talk about what your clients can expect when they come to see you, and of course, Paul, yourself as well. What's that conversation like from day one? When somebody walks in the office, this can be a scary time for people.
Right.
It's a work injury. They may never have gotten in one before. They're scared. They're in pain. Talk about that, you know, conversation. You know, and setting them up for success so that in 2 days they're not calling you back on, are we close to a settlement?
Right, right. So when I meet my clients, I generally tell them that they can expect, barring some unusual circumstances, to be in a position to resolve their workers' compensation case generally between 9 months and a year from the conclusion of their medical treatment. That happens most of the time. Does it happen all of the time? No. And that largely depends upon a variety of factors that are beyond the attorney's control. Sometimes the client actually finishes their medical care and then 6 months later calls me and says, my back is killing me. I have to go back and see the doctor. And that time frame now all gets pushed back where we're going back to workers' comp, requesting that care, and generally speaking, they're getting it. But in terms of money, is that what you're asking?
No, that. I'm talking about
time frames.
Because you walk in the office and first of all, in Jersey, is there a percentage that people get denied. In other words, if you know, in PA, I've heard workers' comp attorneys say, well, the denial and dispute factor that comes into a case, at least at one point during the case, can be fairly high. It can be a 60% type situation.
Yes.
And what I'm talking about is somebody walks in your office, they're stressed about a lot of things.
Right.
That setting them up for success and setting their expectations, not in a settlement type of situation or whatever, but you know, you both work for the defense at one point in time.
Right.
That gives you the experience to be able to say, okay, here's the ebbs and flows that happen here, so that you can prepare them for what may or may not happen. You can't, of course, you're not going to you can't predict everything, but
right. I think if you are not doing that at the outset of the case with your client, you're doing a disservice to yourself and to the client.
Yep.
Because if the client has unrealistic expectations about time frames, money, then it's only going to create a hostile relationship between you and your client, yeah, which is the last thing you want to have happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's got to be from day one. And having bedside manner and the ability to communicate in both of your areas, okay, how important it's got. The biggest complaint people have about their attorney is they don't communicate with me. They don't do things. I mean, somebody might be the most knowledgeable, litigator on the planet. But if you don't have people skills, that's got to be a big part of your success as an attorney.
The number one complaint that I hear from anyone is always a lack of communication for an attorney. So I personally try and call all my clients back before I leave at night, or at a minimum email them. Because if you don't, you're going to end up with potentially ethics problems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you don't want ethics problems.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I meant. Setting yourself up and the client for success doesn't mean you don't know what's going to actually happen, but so that they don't become their own worst enemy. You know, when you're living in the dark and you're scared and all those things, you need to know that your attorney has set up at least a plan, for where we're going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, if people can fall off the rail quickly.
Right.
I mean, there's no debate. Now let's jump in a little bit right now to COVID. Okay, it's coming around again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's somewhat with the vengeance. It's not leaving us alone. What is the impact in Jersey, Steve?
It's funny that you asked that, because before we got in here, I was talking to Paula about that. What's it impact in the courts, or how is it being handled as a workers' compensation potential claim?
Let's go with the courts first and the scenario of how it's impacted work comp. But I'm interested in seeing about the claim side.
So
also,
the courts were closed from basically March 2020, April 2020, something like that, until recently. When I say closed to the public. So we were addressing everything virtually, either by phone or Microsoft Teams, still moving cases, still settling cases, but it was all being done by documentation or virtually. Okay, so now we're back up, we're going into court, but it's different than it was before. There's protocols in some of the courts. We actually there's panels, glass panels, separating the judge and the claimant and me. And so it's a different environment.
What is the court situation like in Jersey? I know I have an idea about PA, which we'll get to, but talk about.
So there's workers' compensation courts in virtually every county in the state. They are not typically in your traditional court. It's in a separate building designated as a workers' compensation court. And there's a judge in each vicinage. So some vicinages have 2, 3, 4. It depends upon how big it is.
And Paul, in PA, an ALJ? I mean, what type of judge?
Well, they're considered an administrative law judge, but
right,
they're workers' comp judges. And since COVID hit with us, we didn't miss a beat because we have WICUS, the workers' comp automated integrated system, which came out about 8 years ago. So we're able to do everything electronically. And to the Bureau's credit, they really jumped in and took over, and we did not miss anything. We haven't been into court yet, and just recently they've changed the rules that judges can have the option of in-person hearings, and they dropped the mask mandate. Now, that all might change. However, the director of adjudication, Joe DeRita, he has been encouraging all the judges throughout the Commonwealth to stay virtual. So our hearings have 99.9% been virtual.
What's the atmosphere difference when obviously you're on Zoom or whatever?
Microsoft Teams.
And you're deposing somebody over a computer, obviously, as compared to in person.
Well, I mean, one of the things that one of the judges said is, this is back in the mask mandate. If I have to have someone wearing a mask, I don't want them in person because I can't see their face. I can't see their facial inflections, and the judges have to judge credibility. So the virtual has been, in my opinion, fine. No masks. We're able to see everybody. The claimant is expected to be not on phone, but on the video, and we've been doing fine.
Any issues where you had some outages, in the middle of anything? Because I've heard some PI attorneys.
Right.
I heard somebody one time, individual said we were doing the closing arguments. We were two-thirds through. And we looked at the screen, and one of the jurors, all of a sudden, and they had to make a decision. Could you imagine that? I mean, and I don't think it was a criminal case. I think it was a PI case.
Was the juror sleeping?
No, they were on video, so it went out.
So
they were doing the closing, and all of a sudden, but obviously we're not talking about a jury or your peers in this case. You're talking about a judge, but
we've had a couple glitches. The biggest thing I notice is freezing, where someone will be talking and they're just frozen, and you just kind of have to wait till that pops back.
Did anybody see it was like the guy had what's that, the screen, what's it called, and he turned into a cat or something? I mean, that's got to be crazy.
That was pretty funny.
That was what do they call that? I forget what they call it, but that was funny. And it is in your world, Steve. You guys,
we're in person now. Depending upon the judge in New Jersey, each judge is their own little fiefdom, so they have their own rules regarding whether they would prefer in person or not. As far as I'm concerned, if I'm taking testimony where I have my client testifying on a trial, I'd prefer them to be live in person, because there's something about a judge appreciating my client, seeing them, how they walk up to the witness stand, seeing how they sit and how they, their pain level. And I just think if I have the right client, I want them in person. I really do.
I agree. In person is better. But when you're faced with the powers that be that want it virtual, you just have
to do what you got to do. But here's the thing. What do you think the defense would prefer, face to face?
You know, it's interesting. I would think so. Yeah.
Because, I mean, you guys have been on that side. Mm-hmm. You can't handle the truth. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think there is something to be said for them to also appreciate what the person's like. You know?
Yep, because I know when I did defense work and you had to bill, and write those reports and give your opinion, I always put in, the claimant seemed credible or not credible, and I would give examples of why I thought that.
It's definitely an odd. If I can imagine that a defense attorney wants to lay the heat on, if possible. And could you imagine Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise on Zoom? Remember that? You can't handle the truth.
Right. Joe, I want to interject. You asked me about COVID, and there's a component to this in New Jersey, and I'm not 100% sure how it works in PA, but during the height of the pandemic in New Jersey, the governor passed a law that said if you were essentially an essential worker and you contracted COVID during the state of the emergency that existed at the time, that there was a rebuttable presumption that you got sick from work.
That's interesting.
Okay. So if you were a police officer or a grocery store worker or a bus driver and exposed to the public and you became ill, the burden then shifted to the employer to establish that you didn't get ill at work, which, if you think about it, it's a very difficult thing. It's basically disproving that the person got sick at work. So,
well, it is interesting. That is interesting. Mm-hmm. Is that the way it is in Philly or
no?
Not? So, because in essence, if they're willing to give you that, and we lost some SEPTA employees. I mean, at the beginning of the pandemic, we were doing a show, a labor show, where we had Willie Brown on, who was at the time the president of TW-234 in Philly, and they had already lost a handful of individuals. They're dealing with, I mean, I don't know if you saw on the news the time where the individual that went on the bus refused to put a mask on. This was at the beginning where no one knew what the heck was.
Yeah.
The police came and had to carry that person off. And so nobody really knew anything that was going on. But, you know, have Paula, in Philly or PA, have you seen any of those cases become successful? COVID-based?
I personally didn't have any COVID cases. I'm on a listserv of claimants' attorneys, and they're always scrambling to find a medical expert to support that their person contracted COVID through work.
And the problem is, you don't know where they were
in
regular life. So having that, you know.
Right, but that creates its own problems, because when the state of emergency ended, you no longer have that rebuttable presumption.
When did that end?
I think it was in December of 2021.
Okay.
So I think it may have been a little bit earlier as far as the state of emergency in New Jersey. But I have, I probably have 5 death cases of COVID. And then I have several other ones with gravely ill people with prolonged long COVID symptoms. But the average guy who got sick and was sick for 2 weeks and has no real ongoing residuals that we know of.
Right.
I'm not taking that case.
Right.
Okay.
Well, you had 5 death cases, but did you have a decent amount of COVID cases of frontliners?
Yes, I have.
Wow.
Thinking about it now, I have one police officer who's really, really ill, fireman, you know, so I have a handful of those. Those were not the death cases, though.
Now, when you're talking about a death case, and I've always wondered about this in a workers' compensation, how do they calculate that as far as financially speaking?
Okay.
You know, I even go to we got about 10 minutes left,
yep.
I think, but even going to a settlement, how does that get calculated?
Okay, so in New Jersey, if I can establish that my client died in the course and scope of his or her employment, then what we're looking at is what's called dependency benefits, okay? And those are benefits that would be paid to the widow or widower and the children, and it's based upon the person's average weekly wage at the time of death. So let's just say, hypothetically speaking, that you were killed in the course and scope of your employment and you made $1,000 a week. The widow or widower would get 70% of that in New Jersey, $700 a week.
For how long?
Forever, as long as they don't get remarried.
That's exactly how it is in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Really?
But in Pennsylvania, it's not 70%. It depends on the person's average weekly wage as to what the compensation rate was.
Oh, my God.
It used to be a sliding scale in New Jersey, depending upon how many dependents you had. They changed that statute a number of years ago and just made it straight 70%. So really, it's 70% of wages for a fixed period of time, and as long as the person doesn't remarry for the remainder of their life. So that's an easy conversation to have with your widow or widower. Listen, you could find the love of your life 10 years from now, or really last 7 years from now, but you really don't want to get married.
Now they're set. In workers' compensation, okay, and we had a little bit of a conversation on this not long ago, Paula. Settlements, okay. Not exactly like a personal injury situation, but in New Jersey,
right.
it's a little different because you can reopen that case, right?
Correct.
How does that work?
So What we're settling cases, generally speaking, for percentages of disability that impact the body parts that are involved, or if it's your torso, your head, your neck, your back, your hips, then you're talking about a settlement in terms of what we would call partial total disability, and that corresponds to a certain amount of money on a chart that the legislature puts out. When you settle that case, depending upon how big the award is, you either get all of that money in one lump sum or you get a big check and then monthly checks until you're all paid. Once you're all paid, you then have 2 years to reopen the case if you can establish that you've gotten worse because of your accident or that you need more medical care.
Right. And do these ever settle the medical?
No, they don't do that like they do in PA, right? They do that in PA?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. They don't do that. Theoretically, it could be done, but I've never done it.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that incredibly interesting.
Yeah.
When you is that typically after the maximum medical improvement?
What, in terms
when,
of?
When settling a case. You know,
yes.
So you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so basically.
And how long does that normally take, that process, to where, and it's a big deal. It's to me, when I think about maximum medical improvement, that explains a lot on how somebody can gauge, you know, the length of their case. I mean, yeah. God knows you're trying to rehabilitate. You don't know when. What is the calculation?
So basically, when my client has concluded their medical treatment, deemed to be what they call MMI or maximum medical improvement, I'm typically waiting 6 months to get them examined by my medical expert or experts, depending upon the nature of the injury. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be seen by my expert. They're going to be seen by the insurance company's expert. We're then going to exchange those expert reports, start a negotiation process between me and their lawyer, and try and resolve the case for some percentage of disability, which translates into an amount of money on a chart that the legislature puts out. If we can't settle that case, then we have a trial before the judge.
Really?
Yeah.
But how's it work in PA, Paula?
Well, settlements in PA are essentially worked off the compensation rate. So you have the average weekly wage, which is the gross amount, and then your comp rate is determined off the average weekly wage. So settlements usually are between 1 and 5 years worth of benefits, and it just depends on the facts of the case. But
I'm going to go with the 5 years for me.
But so, Paula, that's tied to the person's weekly wage then.
Yeah.
That doesn't really work like that in New Jersey. Your weekly wage impacts potentially your entitlement to benefits on this chart, but it's different. It's a different system.
Got it.
And then we have compromise and release agreements, and sometimes I can settle cases with some medical open, depending on the situation, but the carriers really like to shut the whole thing down.
Yeah, we have something similar in New Jersey. We call it a Section 20 settlement. So that's a lump sum payment of money with a dismissal of the case. So very similar, but it has to be approved by a judge.
Yes, ours
do
too.
And it has to meet certain statutory criteria, and some judges are more rigid with that than others.
Got it. We got a couple minutes left. Contingency fee agreement.
Yeah.
You work on that?
No. Not really. The fees in workers' comp in New Jersey are set by the court.
Okay.
Okay, and they can't be more than 20% of the gross award. I generate a retainer agreement that basically says that, but my fees are set by the judge.
Okay, 3 minutes? Okay,
yeah.
Okay, that's what I mean. So, but when somebody walks in the office, do they pay out-of-pocket cost?
Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing.
Right, and that's a big deal.
Yeah, and in fact, in Jersey, it may work different in PA. None of the money ever flows through my office.
Okay.
So if you have a case with me and I get you a settlement of $10,000,
right,
that's paid directly to you. It doesn't come to me. That's one of the reasons why you can't borrow money against workers' compensation cases in New Jersey.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the reasons.
And Paul, contingency fee agreement.
Contingency fee, 20% set by the workers' comp legislation.
And which means that people can go in and get represented by outstanding attorneys like yourselves without coming out of pocket. Otherwise, they could never afford it.
That's right.
That is true.
I mean, you know, like, I mean, you're out of work. That's part of the problem. And to me, that's what, and it's the same with the, when it comes to personal injury at the firm, right, Steve?
Yeah. Yeah. We're fronting the costs on cases, and sometimes they can be astronomical. You know, you need an accident reconstructionist on a complicated case with, you know, an accident on a bridge with two tractor trailers.
Wow.
You know, you could be talking about $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in expenditures to get the case ready to present. And so, yeah, we're fronting that money in those cases.
So this has been the fastest hour in radio. I'd like to, Steve, if you would, contact information at Davis, Aberstein, and Solomon.
Right. It's Stephen with a V, dot Cohen at DSSlaw.com. And the office line is 201-907-5000. And you can find us at www.dsslaw.com.
Awesome. Paula, remind our listeners your contact information.
My email is paula@robinsonlwyr.com. My phone number is 215-530-7166. And my website is www.robinsonlwyr.com.
Awesome. Listen, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Taking Charge with Paula Robinson. We want to thank Paula's guest, Stephen Cohen of Davis, Aberstein, and Solomon. On behalf of Stephen and Paula, I'm Joe Dougherty. And, of course, our new guy here at the station who rocked the house. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you, Joe. Everybody.